This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey, everybody. Jason Cutter here again. This is part two of the conversation with the amazing Joe Calamusa from the University of Alabama. Joe, are you ready to talk about persuasion?
Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
So we're going to continue the conversation that we left off in part one. If you didn't check that out, A, shame on you. B, make sure to finish this episode and then you can go back and check it out. Don't leave us now. But a little bit of his background is he is the managing director of the University of Alabama sales program. He is all about teaching and inspiring professionals, whether it's college students, corporate clients, anything like that. It's all about sales. We had a great conversation in part one talking about authenticity and his journey in food sales and CPG sales at, you know, with professional buyers, which is a totally different game than most people will play in the world of sales. But then teaching the future of sales, how to deal with someone that isn't a professional buyer and where that balance of authenticity comes in, and empathy and things like that, and what you got to do, and some fun highlights in that part one. Make sure to check it out. So Joe, where I wanted to start with this is in this episode, it's all about persuasion. And to me, that's the sales process. That's the intentional act of moving the right people forward and then ultimately leaving them in a better place, right? Like whether you're selling them or helping them in a better direction, but just doing something and persuading them. One of the things that you said closing out the first part was you talked about the art and then the science, and then, you know, you're teaching kids the science and a lot of people think about the art. Where is that balance though? Because it's not all science, it's some art. Where do you see that? And then how do you even teach that?
Well, I can't. That's a good question. I can't. I mean, I'm certainly my interpretation of the craft probably leans of much closer to the science side than many others, and that's okay. It takes a balance. Maybe there's some art in it, but even the art that's in it to me is in its own way science. The challenge for us is that we want to make sure that every student, both college student and corporate student, every student who hears us and sees us teach understands that they can do it. Like they can be elite at it, not good at it, elite at it. And I think to some degree, maybe it's just a veneer that I'm using, but to some degree, if you make it an art, you're eliminating, whether you realize it or not, a significant portion of your audience, because they may not see themselves as naturally talented at it. Mm. And that goes a lot with personality styles. We've already mentioned in the first episode that oftentimes the extrovert that thinks they can sell it takes them longer to learn how to sell because you got to break them down before you can build them back up. So by presenting it as a science and teaching it as a science, Our goal there is to be as inclusive as possible. Anybody can learn a process. Not everybody can be a painter.
Got it. What's interesting in hearing you talk about that is, in my mind, in the little bit that I've gotten to know you, and then obviously in the first part of our conversation, listening to you and knowing your approach, is there's the science, which is the process, which is, you know, the steps to take and what to do and how to go through that. To me, I'm wondering if the art piece, and this is the way I think of it, is how to apply those. Like if you were training a football player, there's all the science to being a football player. Let's say you're a receiver. It's like, here's what you do. Here's all the plays. And then the art to me is the, all right, but then this happens and you've got to pivot in the moment. So there's the ability to then roll with it, right? There's only so many science and so much plays. And then there's just figuring it out on the field.
Well, that, and I would say, so take that same metaphor and say, okay, I'm going to teach you the science of playing the position. And I'm mm-hmm. should not broach athletic metaphors, but I'm going to do it anyway.
It's okay. You're in a safe place because I can also not pay more than a 3-minute sports tax.
People who are watching this can or listen to it can break down my bad athletic metaphor. But I do teach the science of playing the position. Most of the adjustments that are made as the play goes on or even in game are actually also scientific process decisions that can be made. What you said at the beginning, though, really probably captures it better than I ever could, which is there is a personal art that every player brings to their position. And what I want the students, corporate and college students, to understand is if you learn the science of it, then the art you have can add to the science. But even if your artistic instincts aren't right, sharp, correct, if you stick to the science, mm-hmm. your art won't kill you. So your art can be the way you do it. Your art is the way you practice the science. But your art, as long as it is not in confrontation with the science, cannot prevent you from being successful. That's the approach I would want them to take. The art can add to it, but as long as you stick to that scientific base, that art will not prevent you from pursuing your purpose.
When I hear that, I think of a couple things. One is I love what you said, which is you're worried because if you talk too much about the art or students think it's art, then they think they have to have that natural born sales side, which would then eliminate that group who could be really good. And I would argue are actually better than the natural born salespeople because they're doing it from a different place and following science instead of just winging it. Because they think they have the talent, right? Like on the field, that person who's got all the talent but doesn't want to follow any of the plays is a dangerous disaster mm-hmm. for a team or in anything. Mm-hmm. And so, and then you know the part we talked about in the first segment too was just you know I said do the opposite of what you think salespeople do, and as long as they do that following your science, the art part is secondary because if you just follow something that works. You can bring yourself in, right?
Mm-hmm. There's no doubt. You nailed it in the sense that I just don't want to leave. I don't want anybody to leave. I don't care if it's a semester or a session, whatever it is. I don't want anybody to leave thinking, I can't do this. It's okay to think I can't do it right now, but I don't want anybody to think that I have to be born a certain way to be elite. At persuasion, very similar to how if you teach time management is largely seen by many people as, you know, either I have it or I don't. I come from seven generations of disorganized people, so I'm disorganized. It's my thing. I can't help it. Not my fault. But shut up. I mean, anybody can be an elite level manager of time and resources. You just got to learn it. So I guess it probably ends up manifesting itself where I'm pushing science too much and maybe not giving room for art to breathe, but it's done with the best of intentions. I just don't want anybody to leave while I'm letting art breathe.
So I want to throw this at you because I think this might resonate as well, is I once read that the difference between an amateur, a novice, and a master is not that the master never makes a mistake. It's that when the master does make a mistake, they know how to recover quick and or recover in a way that mistake is now a great feature. Think of someone who's a woodworker and something happens, they weren't planning, and then they turn that into an amazing thing that everyone's like, wow, how did you come up with that? It was like, that was a mistake that I made it better. When I hear you talking about it, is like the master elite salesperson is all science. And then when something happens, they have that final piece, which is the art to then recover, right? In those situations.
Yeah, agreed. And I'll tell you, I think to take that at one step farther, I think oftentimes the sales artist doesn't even know they made a mistake. Hmm. They can't get any better because in their mind, they don't make mistakes because this is my art. And so it's the buyer's fault or your company's fault, or it's a bad territory I got put into, or, you know, economic situation's bad, or, you know, I'm just practicing my art and I'm not having success. Well, they don't even know they did anything wrong because what do they have to compare it to? They're not comparing. You can't do critical improvement on art. So you gotta have a process to connect it to, a science to check it against. And so, and then it makes it worse because I know we're probably characterizing a bit, but I mean, the person we're talking about, the person who thinks they're a natural born salesperson, a lot of times they're extroverted. Nothing wrong with extroverts. Love them to death. Wish I was one. they're extroverts. They're typically very confident, maybe even cocky, maybe even arrogant. And that hubris becomes the thing that blinds them or blocks them from realizing you're terrible. You got to get better. You got to get back in the lab. You're not, you know, you're not getting sales because your product's bad or your price is too high. You're not getting sales because you're terrible.
Yeah. And I think you just said something that's just so amazing and fundamentally valuable to me. And that's what's fun about this show. Like every single time I've had conversations, especially with professional sales educators like you, say something that maybe is a little different. And I'm like literally excited because this is rocking my world. Because what you're talking about is there's the art and the science, the natural born salesperson versus the nurture one, right? The one that's got to learn it and grind it out and develop it. And what you literally said is so impactful for people who might not have heard it the first time. Here it is that the natural born person is just relying on the art. Let me do what I do best. I don't need your process, your system, your scripts, your CRM, your accountability. I don't need anything. Just let me do what I do best. And it doesn't work. Like, I'll just leave it at that and be nice. It just doesn't work. You can't scale that. You can't repeat it. You can't be successful. All you can do is do well until, like you said, they like to blame the economy, taxes, the weather, and then they change industries because they think that'll be better and they blame that industry and they literally do it. And I don't care if I'm calling you out if you're listening to this, but that's because they rely on art because they think they're a natural born artist at sales versus the scientist, which then can learn and develop and get better. That's amazing, Joe.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that. It's in line with what you've been saying and what you wrote. And it's just, you know, you mentioned the change industry thing, and now that we're calling people out, there's also folks who just, you know, managed to somehow in their 25-year sales career hit every single company in their industry. And they stay there. They interview real good. They got three stories of how they changed the sales world with something they sold, you know, 4.5 years ago. And they convinced the new company in the industry to hire them. And they get out, and it takes the new company to 2 years to realize they don't do anything. They're just hiding behind a ficus tree and, you know, saying nice things at the company meeting, and they go to the next company. And you can do it. Listen, man, if you can convince every company in your industry to keep you for 3 years, and there's 10 companies in the industry, man, you got a 30-year career of mediocrity. Congratulations, you got it.
It's true, and a lot of those people just leverage or use their golden Rolodex for old people like us that know what a Rolodex is, a golden Rolodex, their network, and say, hey, you hire me, I can get you sales. And that works for, you know, the first 6 months, 9 months, and then that dries up, right? So now that we got that, like, that was amazing. I absolutely love it. Let's shift a little bit to the process itself, sales process. Okay. What are you teaching? What have you found works from a sales process, the science at the fundamental level that you're teaching that is at the intersection of what buyers want?
And I'm going to answer that question. Just pardon the 20-second digression, not even that. Okay. Isn't that a wonderful thing to encourage the next generation of salespeople in college, that there are people that we just described, you know, that just sort of sit back on their laurels? I mean, you can, it's not like a lot of other industries, a lot of other crafts. If you're a 20-something-year-old kid out of school and you're hungry and you're humble and you're ready to go get it with the process, you can beat anybody. I don't care how many years of sales experience you got, you can beat anybody. And it's hard to say that in a lot of other worlds. Okay, I'm sorry about that, but back to your answer. We teach a sales process that's primarily rooted in the interaction. Because we certainly teach sales strategy and territory management and decision center navigation, all these big things in our later classes. But in the intro level class, we focus, and even in the second class, the advanced class, we really focus on the individual interaction. That's where we persuade, okay? And so it's about teaching them how to manage that individual interaction. So we start with what we can control. So for example, the first role play you do in an intro level sales class, you're going to do a role play where you're selling a consumer packaged goods product to a corporate buyer merchandiser, because they know how to buy, right? And it's 100% scripted. And this is where a lot of people I will lose a lot of your audience. The entire thing is 100% scripted. They can write and read every word. So there is an introduction. There's a connection. They're going to ask 4 to 6 questions. They're going to deliver a value proposition. They're going to ask a confirmation question. There will be no objection. They're coming later. They're going to deliver a second information section with a display, graph charts, whatever it is. They're going to ask confirmation question again. They're not going to get an objection. They're going to ask the customer to move forward with the process. The buyer's going to say yes after 5 minutes, and that's it. And it's the most unrealistic thing in the world, but that's where you start. And so then once you build that, then they know how to do that. Then you can start adding some things that you can't control and things you got to move and things you got to change and no note sections and listen to this answer and use it later and all those kind of things we teach as the class goes on.
I love it. I think that's a great way to go. Analogies just pop in my head, as I'm sure they do with you as well. And I'm thinking, like, first you said that it was going to lose my audience. No, if anyone's here tuning into this show, it's because they see sales different or want to see sales different. So this audience knows me hopefully well enough to know I support those things. I love scripts. Even in a sales process, there's things that should be 100% scripted, 100% read or memorized, like the things that you say and do, you just don't realize it. And so that artist salesperson that doesn't want anything, like, they're not for us. But literally, I'm thinking about what you're talking about, where it's like some, like all of us, when we learn to drive, like in a parking lot with an instructor and everything is controlled and everything is scary. And it's like, don't do anything. And maybe they have a pedal on their side in case you get out of control and they can literally stop the car. But people think in sales, like, oh, just show up and wing it, right? Like, you wouldn't just show up in the car and just wing it out on the highway. Like, I hope not. And so I love where you're starting with them in those baby steps and controlling those interactions. So then what happens next? Because not every buyer is a professional buyer. And then how do you progress from there? What do you teach them about the science?
Yeah, great job. So they're in a semester in one of our courses, the intro level course, the one we're talking about here, since we're talking about fundamentals. There are 6 role play scenarios, each one of them sponsored by a different corporate partner. So every 2 weeks, the class essentially changes over. You prepare, then you present, then you get a new scenario, you prepare, you present. And my job is essentially as the teacher is just coaching them to get ready for the presentation in class. So when you move from, say, Pepsi sponsors our first presentation of the semester, and then Shaw Fours might sponsor the second presentation semester. So you go from a merchandiser buyer at Kroger Corporate when you're selling, you know, Dole fruitified juices to Pepsi or to Kroger for Pepsi, to say an A&D architecture design firm who's building a new hospital or school, and you're trying to get in the bid process with Shaw Floors. Okay, so what happens there is the buyer changes, situation changes. Usually it's a little more complex, one step at a time. But the big change is not so much the sponsors and scenarios. The big change is the actual presentation or process. So for example, they'll still make an introduction and deliver a connection. We may change the connection from a person in common connection to an agenda statement connection, which is a little more of an advanced connection piece, right? The questions they'll still ask questions before they deliver a value proposition because we're still staying fundamental. But in this case, one of the answers that the buyer gives you, you may have to use later in the presentation, okay? Which means the entire presentation can't be scripted because now for points later, I've got to use in my benefit statement or implications, we call it, I've got to use something that the buyer said or the customer said, not a buyer, the customer said, and they answered one of my questions. I got to use it later. And so you add a little element of lack of control there. We call it a pick and pop. We have to pick in what the answer in one place and pop it in somewhere else. Okay. And then, for example, the second of the 2 information sections may require no notes, which means they've got to do 40 seconds to 115, 45 to 115 on a certain aspect of their product line with no notes. So they've got to like deliver it, you know, staring at the camera or staring at the person who's grading it. So you just start to add in. And as you get to the, you know, as you go through each scenario, by the end of the semester, there's still a structure. They still have to follow and do things objectively because I have to grade objectively. There's no such thing as subjective. There should be no such thing as subjectivity in grading. If you're grading subjectively, then you're just grading on mood and what you like, and you might as well just be lying to the student. Just lie to them because you're lying to them. So you've got to be objective in your grading, okay? So even at the end, there's structure, but the whole 85 of the 100 points in the presentation could be outside of the script, like not scriptable. So they still have to script, you know, but they don't know what the objections are going to be. They introduce themselves and deliver some kind of connection, and the buyer says, customer says, maybe it's a small business owner, owns an automotive shop. You're trying to show their employees Aflac insurance products. And the automotive shop buyer can't stand slick, slimy, selly. They're skeptical to salespeople. You start your thing off, and the automotive shop owner says, wait before you get too far. I only want to hear about this. And you don't know what the this is, so is the student. So you got to be ready for anything. And so by the end of it, you're never winging it. We don't wing it. I love the term you've been using. We never wing anything. I'm just ready for anything. I'm not winging anything. I'm just ready for anything.
I love it. So from that buyer side, from the customer, potential customer side, what is it that, like, why don't they buy from people other than the slick, slimy, selly person?
Yeah.
But why don't they buy, and what's the challenge that people have in persuading them to move forward?
Yeah, I think that the customers that we deal with, whether it's, you know, partners here at UA or clients we might work with outside of UA, whatever it is, what we hear more than anything else is that the seller cannot provide to the buyer or customer of any kind, cannot provide to the customer anything beyond what the customer could consume on their own. And maybe that is the biggest difference in sales in the last 20 years because of just the proliferation of information. Like, you know, used to be I was the only dude or dudette that had the product information and the pricing. But now the information is so accessible by customers, and so much of the interactions can be done and transactions can be done online, that I need a seller. And I know this is, you know, consultative and all that stuff, that's fine, but I need a seller who can go deeper than what I can learn on my own. And then maybe more importantly, personalize, position everything that I can find on my own and help me build what I need. Like, help me build what will get me from where I am to where I want to be. Like, I realize problem solving comes there, but we spend so much time on things like pain points and problem solving that stuff is fine if you want to sell some books. But generally what I'm trying to do is not solve problem or make pain go away. Generally what I'm doing is helping the company or the division or department or the person get from where they are to where they want to be, which is a much more positive, progressive approach. But you have to be more than just the person who brings the prices and the products to be able to do that. And a lot of salespeople, to most salespeople, can't do that.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge shift, both from really, let's say, old school pre-internet. I have all the knowledge, the facts, the features, the pricing, and you need me, to the next evolution, which is find the pain and solve the pain, and the, you know, things like the Sandler pain submarine and stuff like that, where it's like all about that versus what you're saying, which is you're here, I'm going to help you get there, whether it's out of pain or you just have goals. Like, I don't care the middle part. It's here's the destination, right? Like I say, leave people better than you found them as the outcome for your science.
Yeah, but we have to do what you teach. We have to do what you teach, which is I've got to understand where they want to be. How can I get them from where they are to where they want to be if I don't understand where they want to be? We sort of obsess over finding out where they are. How's your business? And that's fine. But where do you want to go? What, you know, and if, listen, persuade someone of the merits of something. If my thing doesn't have any merits, if the something doesn't have any merits to the someone, well, then I'm wasting my time and your time anyway. So I'm trying to figure out whether my something can help the someone. And all I'm doing is searching for the merits of the something to the someone, so the something can help the someone get where the someone wants to go. And that's, I think, the future, much more so than, you know, whack-a-mole, find problem, solve problem, you know, get transaction closed deal.
I love it. I'm going to have to listen to that again because that sounded like a tongue twister and a brain teaser of, you know, find the thing and do the thing and the Yeah, I love it. And I think that's a great place for us to stop here, because in the next section, we're going to talk about the future of sales and, you know, what people want more of, less of, where technology comes in, where the future of sales and the salespeople that you're focusing on, where they come into this. Again, for people tuning in, listening or watching this, make sure to check with or connect with Joe on LinkedIn. It's Joe Calamusa. Also, you can find the University of Alabama sales program. They made it really easy. It's the UA Sales program.com. Someone was very smart and effective and efficient at setting that up. The links will be in the show notes. Joe, thank you for being here. This has been amazing. So many notes, so many things that literally my brain is just buzzing on. That's so awesome. I loved what you said. So thanks for being here, and I can't wait for the next part.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
All right. And for everyone else, thank you for tuning in again on this journey, switching sales the way it's been done, the thing that buyers avoid, they don't want to deal with, whether they're a professional buyer or just a normal human just in the process of buying something or being sold something. But they want guidance. They want help. They want the stuff that Joe was talking about. So thank you for tuning in and being a part of this. And as always, thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.